It doesn't have to come from the Nuxt team because these modules can do anything. In fact, a lot of Nuxt code is actually written as internal modules. Most significant changes we make to Nuxt start out as modules to test them. So it's not like everything that we use is exposed for anyone to use. That is has made a huge difference.
Hey everyone, we wanted to announce a small change to the podcast. So we're really excited to share with you that we have a corporate sponsor now. We would like to thank Raycast for sponsoring our podcast. I'm going to hand it over to Andrew to share a little bit more about what some of these changes mean.
So over the past year, we've had a free and paid version of the podcast. The free version usually cuts out 10 to 15 minutes of content. Thanks to the sponsor, we'll no longer be doing that. The paid version will just have the ads removed. We're also excited to announce that by partnering with Raycast, we'll be able to bring you weekly episodes of DevTools FM, so you'll get twice as much content as you're used to.
We would again like to thank all of our Patreon sponsors. You've really helped us get to this point, so we really appreciate you. We have a 30% discount code for you for any merch, if you'd like to buy stickers or something. Again, thank you so much. We hope you enjoy listening to the podcast going forward.
And if you yourself are a business that's interested in sponsoring the podcast, head over to devtools.fm/sponsor to apply. Hello, welcome to the DevTools FM podcast. This is a podcast about developer tools and the people who make them. I'm Andrew, and this is my co-host, Justin.
Hey, everyone. We're really excited today to have Daniel Rowe on. So Daniel leads the Nuxt core team. The Nuxt core team. Nuxt is an incredible project. Been following along with that for a while. Really love to see it. So you've done a lot of things, Daniel. But instead of me reading your bio, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Well, yeah. Thank you for the welcome and the job expansion as well. Sure. Yeah. So a little bit about myself. So I was born at a very young age, and basically didn't do any real programming at that point. I guess my career path has followed a very different path than I think even I might have expected. So I liked lots of different things in school, and did bits of hobby programming here and there, Visual Basic and that kind of thing. But I went to university and I studied law, which I loved arguing, debating, citing precedents and moot court, that kind of thing. And then actually I worked for a church. I was a sort of jack of all trades parish assistant. I was called for a year, and then actually went to seminary, theological college, and studied, got a degree there, and then became a church leader in the UK. When the time came to do something different, I started a creative agency with my dad and my wife, and that was all about finding the right words. So it was all focused on writing, which is another great love of mine. And then we gradually started doing a little bit more coding, because that was really the other half of figuring out someone's brand and message. It's actually to implement it. So I did that because I could. So I was doing logos and branding and sort of building people sites, and just gradually got back into coding, and obviously helped out by contributing back to the projects we were using. And then just, it feels like a couple of years passed, and somehow I'm heading up Nuxt, which feels a bit crazy. I'm not really sure. Sometimes that's really true, but that's a strange journey, right? That's not what you would expect.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, this is the fun thing about hearing people, especially, I think this is especially true of the people who get involved in open source, is that there are just a lot of really interesting background stories. And I don't know, this one, yours is really cool.
It's always inspiring to hear people that started in one place and ended up in coding somehow. I was reading a tweet yesterday where somebody was like, yeah, coding compared to like the other sciences and math is like easy space. Like you could study for like 2 years and then get into this space. It's nothing like hardcore mathematics. So yeah, I love how fun and inviting it is.
It's basically just, it's magic with thoughts.
Yeah. Yep.
So anything you can think about, you can make true. So that's pretty cool and amazing. And basically from the moment you can think of it, you can make it, you can figure out how to make it real. because almost everything is possible. So it's a sort of, I think it's very inviting because it is so immediate. Like and the gap between having real tangible reward for what you're doing is so, the gap is so small. So you can almost, and particularly I think that's true with web development, you know, it's harder when you're sort of building native apps and things like that. But even there, like, as you say, you know, you might study for 2 years. I think you don't have to study for 2 years. You know, you can get real results within a matter of days or hours even. And then it's reward, cycle of reward. So you have something great and you want to make something else, and then you have to learn something to do it. But it doesn't feel like at work because you immediately get the reward of the thing that you wanted to do. And so it's just this a wonderful virtuous cycle, I think.
So we'd like to thank Raycast for sponsoring our podcast. If you haven't heard of Raycast, it's an app for Mac that's like Spotlight, but with superpowers. You can do all the same things you do in Spotlight, quickly opening files, URLs, but it also has a lot of other cool features like clipboard history, window management, schedule overview, which I personally love, and a lot of other stuff. It's also got a really, really great React-based extension API, which is super cool.
Yeah, so what extensions have you been working into your workflow lately?
I've really enjoyed the scheduling extension in particular. So it has this functionality where it essentially hooks up to your calendar and you can have a key binding that basically takes you into your next meeting. And I find that super, super useful.
In a similar vein, I'm finding the built-in reminders extension really useful. I love that you can just like pop into the macOS defaults and it feels like it's native.
Something else I've been enjoying is Raycast AI. That's their pro functionality, but it gives you access to these built-in large language model AI features that help you summarize notes, fix mistakes, change the tone of a highlighted phrase. The thing that I really like about this over chat-based AI solutions is that it's integrated directly into your workflows. So, you know, highlight something, run a keyboard shortcut like you do for any other extension, and then it'll activate this functionality. So it's really cool, really, really helpful.
To learn more, you can visit raycast.com, or you can go listen to episode 38, where we talk with the CEO, Thomas, about the product.
I'm curious, because you were working in an agency and you did some design work, and then you came into programming again through that, even though you had done some hobby programming earlier in your life. What are the, do you think there are parallels between the design process and the like programming process from just like a purely, you know, you're talking about that like rich reward that you get of like, you know, having an idea and bringing something to life. And sometimes I think about that from the design space. It's like, it can be hard to conceptualize something and like bring a design to life, but there is like a gratifying feeling there. So do you feel like there are parallels between the two?
I should say to start with, I don't think I'm a very good designer. So I think I have opinions. So I know what I like and I sort of recognize it rather than knowing how to create it. So my design process was largely, you know, playing around with curves and, you know, fixing logos until I felt that sense of recognition. And this is right. This looks good. And so we got to some very nice places, but it's not because I think I was a very good designer. I think it was more because I think at some point, at least one of the things that I did was okay. And that was how we got there. So I am not the person to ask about the design process because I don't think my design process was the way. I mean, I basically, this is 1,000 monkeys on, you know, 1,000 keyboards. That's what I exemplified. But I think I do look at programmers who do have really lovely design sensibilities. People like Anthony Fu has done some really great stuff. And, you know, you think at the level of this is art, and has a sort of similar, I do think there's a similarity in terms of the elegance of particular kinds of design and coding, that there's this sort of search for the sort of the elegant, the minimal, the like the perfect choice. And which I think is similar also to the choice that looking for the perfect word or message. Again, you're trying to come up with something that is infinitely small, you know, like a fractal, something that is perfectly the right size to do what it needs to do to express something or communicate something, or obviously encoding to sort of do something. And sort of with like with a message, it's fractal because you can zoom into it. So a message can take 10 seconds, but you could talk about it for 20 minutes or an hour, or you could give a day's workshop on it because it has this sort of fractal quality. And I think sort of identifying something like that is the same kind of thing that programmers, I think, are trying to do when they try and make something generic or reusable, or, you know, not just for the specific use case, but something that might be bigger. I think it's the same mental leap that's happening. I don't know if that answers your question at all, because as I said, I'm not the right person to speak to the design process. What do you find? What's your take?
It's a good question. I mean, I think all creative endeavors have a similar sort of echo. It just depends on what you lean towards, right? Because it's like the level of effort. So you're talking about like programming, like yielding these rich rewards, and this is the feedback cycle of like seeing what I've done come to life. But for some people, that can be really hard because there's a sort of, you know, there's a lot of steps that you have to go through. There's a lot of syntax you have to memorize. You have to do these sort of like rote rituals for this thing to work. And if that doesn't come naturally to you, then it can be a lot of friction to see something come to life. Whereas maybe, you know, you're presented with a canvas and like Figma or something, and that is like the world that you can really bring something to life. You know, I think it depends on for different people. But I particularly appreciate the design developer overlap because it's such a rare breed of person. And the other thing that I really believe is that it's always, every time I've worked with somebody who's like can do both design and development like pretty well, they always just have such a really creative outlook. And it's just like they're I don't know, just a different breed, and such a pleasure every time I've come across somebody like that.
I do think there's something about what you're saying about the steps required. So friction basically is the thing that makes the feedback loop longer and more tiresome. Like the amount of friction, like installing a Node version manager and trying to figure out how to configure Git, and like whatever levels that, like whatever the particular thing is, the things that are not about what you're doing, the other things, the things that get in the way of what you're doing and stop you even from doing the basic thing that the tutorial has told you to do. Those things, I think, are what, you know, stops people. And the lack of resources or the lack of intuitiveness of it, that kind of friction is basically the enemy of developers getting better at what they're doing.
Cool. I think that works as a really good transition into the rest of our conversation. You mentioned that your past endeavors, like with law, you enjoyed it because it was a lot of arguing. The front end space is rife with arguing. So let's start it off with a salient point. Why do you like Vue, and what about Vue application development speaks to you?
So, I mean, to be boring, I think basically all of these different programming tools and languages and frameworks are just tools in a toolbox. And so, you know, we're aspiring to be artists and craftspeople. And so, you know, using one versus the other is a great thing to talk about, a bad thing to make enemies. Why I like Vue, I think obviously there's the historical reason, you know, why I picked it in the first place, but why I like it now, and why I've chosen it time and time again on lots of different projects. It's not the only thing I work in, but I really like how Vue mirrors the primitive languages of web. So things like HTML, CSS, and JavaScript are sort of mirrored in a single file component in Vue. So again, so for example, when I had an agency onboarding a new developer who hadn't used Vue or React or any framework, I could tell them to write HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And literally, there would be a little bit more work required. So we could wire up the HTML they wrote and simplify it, make it actually clearer. But basically, what they wrote would work. It would be the same thing. And that's a great, like, immediate reduction of friction. And also, the other way, you know, someone who's working in Vue can go back, I think, to use some of those things. So there's, I think you see a sort of tendency in Vue developers, for example, to pick not CSS and JS frameworks, but frameworks that just output CSS. And there's this sort of feeling like we want to go back to these sort of three core primitives of the web. And I really like that. I think that feels nice to me. It's how I like to think. I mean, I think there are other really, really nice things about Vue in terms of how the framework works. I like the fact that it's not a sort of perpetual re-render cycle. I like the fact that you have component instances. I really like the new composable architecture. I also really like the community. So the Vue community is a really positive and friendly one. It's very international. So you have people using Vue all over the world. And I think maybe that's been the case from the very beginning. And again, this is the kind of thing that just happens by sort of historical accident in terms of who picks up something and where the groups of keen users ended up being in the early days. But yeah, the Vue community is just, it's just lovely. And because it's not the biggest community, obviously the React gets that particular gold star. But because Vue isn't the biggest community, it's also therefore a little bit closer knit. And so you can, there's a feeling of, you know, we're friends here. I'm not, by the way, saying any of this is not true of other groups, but it's definitely, those are definitely things I like about Vue.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the community point, because like, while React is really siloed in companies and meeting companies' needs, Vue isn't really attached to a company. It's more of like an open source collaboration between a lot of people.
I think it's pioneered. Evan's sort of governance model for Vue and trying to figure out how that is sustainable has sort of shaped how other open source projects also have sort of sought to make themselves sustainable. And yes, he's not sought to commercialize it. I'm sure if Evan had chosen to, he could have made Vue probably much more profitable in some ways, but probably also lost this feeling of being a community project. Because you're right, Vue is not, it's not, there is no company that it's associated with. Nobody has hired Evan. I'm sure he wouldn't have any difficulty with that if he wanted to. But Vue has kept its independence and has kept its sort of feel like this is a project, you know, of the people, for the people, by the people. You know, so it is a nice.
Yeah. When I first sort of getting in the framework scene, I learned a little bit about React and you know, I had the sort of like quintessential turn off of JSX that a lot of people had in the early days of React. And I sort of got into Vue because of the template, the single file components. And also, that was for me at the time, working with designers who could like prototype everything in HTML, JavaScript, CSS. It's like, you know, I could say, hey, here's the general format, and the same thing. They'd give me the file, and I could make that a component really easily. And then when I tried to talk to like a React component, they were like, what is this shit? like don't show me this. So when I moved to New York, I was actually helped organize the Vue.js NYC meetup for a while. And it is such a great community. I think to another point of what you said, the internationalization, in a large part, you know, they had translations in their docs really, really, really early on. You know, I think earlier than a lot of frameworks were really doing that. So that and the good docs and the just comprehensive ecosystem out of the box, all those things were huge for Vue.
Yeah. And I think there are some other things too. I mean, you see there's often a chosen way path. So there's, you know, a single Vue router. There was Vuex, a single store. Not that these things are universal, but even now, for example, there's Pinya, which is the successor to Vuex, but it's not the only one. There's Harlem, for example. You can actually, Vuex still works. But there is this kind of blessed path that there's this sort of first party. It works. It, you know, fits in with the ecosystem. You can choose other things, but you don't have to be paralyzed by choice when you're starting a new project. And that is, I think, talking about friction, that is one of the key things, I think, that keeps developers building quickly. And I think is one of the reasons Tailwind, for example, is such a loved choice, that people just don't have to make choices. They don't have to, how are we going to set up the CSS tokens for this project? Oh, you're new? Okay, well, let's spend some time familiarizing you with the unique way we do things here. But you don't have that anymore. So, you know, Tailwind just, you have a sort of easier path in. And I think you have that by default with Vue because of, you know, the fact that the routing and the state management, and there are lots of other libraries as well that fall into that kind of category. Whereas it's a sort of, you have choice, but if you're not looking to do something different, there is a well-paved road going down whatever path you want to take.
I think another tool that really exemplifies that is Prettier. It's like, we used to argue about formatting. Now we don't. There's no configuration. We can't argue anymore. So speaking of like provided workflows and tools that help with that friction problem you keep talking about, what is Nuxt and why would I want to use it? And then as a person who doesn't ever touch Vue, how is it related to Next?
So, well, it is... Nuxt is a framework for building web apps. And it's based on Vue. So it uses Vue for the front-end part. It also has a server framework called Nitro that we built for it, which is now being used by other frameworks as well. So there's an Angular framework, meta framework called Analog, which is built on Nitro too. And we're really eager to collaborate with other frameworks. So Nuxt is I guess similar to Next in some of the things that you might look for. So it's a meta framework, that is. So it will basically aim to abstract away a lot of the pain of working with building a modern web app. So in the early days, that was the pain of configuring your Webpack installation. That's not something people probably even remember these days, but it was a real pain point. Back in the day. Now Vite is our default bundler, but again, Nuxt takes care of configuring it and making things just work. So it makes things work like server-side rendering, SEO just works, routing, so you just create pages in a pages directory and that works. One of the big things for Nuxt 3 has been just making TypeScript work. So again, you have things just sort of have the right type. Type inference works with, so for example, the kind of thing we can do because it's a meta framework, you create a server route in your application. We actually set it up so that when you are making a fetch request to that server route, you get the right type, return type of that server route in the front end component where you are using it. So you have sort of end-to-end type safety just out of the box without having to do anything at all. We do other things as well, sort of performance optimized things. So we make a lot of utilities available to you that you can just use anywhere. But rather than register those things globally, we auto import them where they're needed, which means that when you are building, Nuxt is a kind of framework that basically evaporates out. If you don't need it, it's not in your build. And so that's quite a nice sort of approach that really was made possible by Vue 3's pattern of composable utilities, sort of a composable architecture. So, and we use that in not just the front end part of Nuxt, but also in the server side. So basically we make all of the sort of this smorgasbord of what you might want to do available to you. And then just what you need is actually part of your final site. But yes, it does a lot of things. It covers everything from the server side to the sort of browser side, to the building and bundling in between.
What made the TypeScript integration hard?
Well, honestly, I wouldn't say it wasn't super hard, but it's just a lot of glue. So stuff, and as much as possible, I mean, best practices, you don't want the framework to be doing, you want it to be doing as little as possible. You want TypeScript to be doing the work. So some of the things we had, so our server framework, for example, has some really nice conventions. So it's called H3. And it's like a modern version of Express. That's what I mean by a sort of server framework. For example, if you're returning JSON, which is by far the normal thing to do, you just return an object, and it handles stringifying that and adding the right content type headers and sort of returning it. But because you're directly returning an object, it actually means that the return type of the endpoint is just actually the return type of the function. So we don't have to do any magic. We just have to tell TypeScript that the return type of the path, like /API root, matches the return type of this function, like this import. So we just, it's at one line for every file. We also support sort of method matching. So like if you have a post endpoint, it might have a different return type from the get version of the same endpoint. So we also add that. So basically that is pretty much all we do. And then just some clever types. Library TypeScript is the worst kind, right? So it's to get that kind of magic of you start typing and it starts inferring, oh, this root can only accept these methods. So if you put the wrong method in, it's going to be a type error. That's really nice. But the amount of code, like type code needed to achieve that is often quite complex. But it's not specific to the root. It's just sort of generic library code that we wrote.
Is it running in like a separate process or like, is it just like, you know, like nothing's running? It's not code gen. It's just like the code makes that possible.
So basically there are two pieces. So one is just TypeScript in your IDE is doing the work. There is a bit which is generated types, and basically you can inspect them. You can have a look in the .nuxt folder in your project, and that would be only changed, for example, when you create or remove a file. For the particular thing that we're talking about here. So you create a new server endpoint, and then this new file is the file has a new line added to it, basically saying this endpoint matches this file. Then from that point onwards, you're making changes to the file. Nuxt doesn't have to write any changes because it's already told TypeScript to connect the two, and everything else is just your editor inferring it from that point. So we really try to keep that to a minimum. We do some generated types. So for example, when you are taking in environment variables into your app, we have a sort of convention of runtime configuration, which allows you to specify these are the variables that I care about. And that means at runtime, we don't just pull in all the environment variables that exist in that environment and sort of pipe them into your app. That would be a bad idea. But instead, only those variables get pulled in. Well, we type them. So if they come in as, because we will pass them, so you can pass Booleans and numbers, strings, arrays, all kinds of things via an environment variable, which is technically only a string. And we can actually rewrite some code gen to say when you're consuming it in your code, oh, this runtime config thing, it's a string. This one over here is an array of numbers. And so you can actually get that. And we generate that, but that's not really code you're touching much. Or shouldn't really, like that's, you're not iterating on that. You sort of set it up and then just consume it as much as possible. But I mean, it's nice, isn't it, to have that kind of type support automatic.
Sweet, that sounds really cool.
You've just told me that you're sort of not a Vue person. So I just want to get you. I just want to demo it for you and show you what it's like.
You won me over a little bit with that. Like code gen is often like, I don't like having to manage something like that. So the more automatic it can be, the better. And like React has jumped through many a hoop to try to get end-to-end type safety. And I love that you guys just built it in. Like if you look at like Next, the React server components are basically like a very long play to get like end-to-end type safety. And you did it without having to like reinvent the wheel.
Well, thank you. I mean, I guess we'll see what you say when you try it. But I mean, and it's interesting that I mean, Next are obviously our close sort of peer because Next inspired Nuxt. So Nuxt was created in the first place because Next existed. So Next did exactly this thing. It abstracted away the Webpack config for React, and Nuxt was the same for Vue. And it's been through a lot since then. So Next and Nuxt have both evolved in different directions. But because we are in the same ecosystem, as in we're facing the same problems, developers are trying to create performant web apps. We're trying to make it possible for them to have a good developer experience. And we're solving the same kind of problems along the way. So we have an interesting sort of path of converging and diverging at times. So one of the things that's very different between Nuxt and Next is the extensibility of Nuxt. So we have a modules ecosystem with Nuxt, which means anyone can write code that hooks deeply into Nuxt and how it operates. We have hooks that are called at lots of different points throughout the build process. And it's possible when TypeScript support was first added to Nuxt, it was added as a module. When somebody wants to add a new authentication provider, or they want to add a CMS, or any optimization, anyone can do it. It doesn't have to come from the Nuxt team, because these modules can do anything. In fact, a lot of Nuxt code is actually written as internal modules. So it's very, very, very buildable. Most significant changes we make to Nuxt start out as modules to test them. So it's everything that we use is exposed for anyone to use. And that means that has made a huge difference just in terms of how Nuxt has grown and developed. So we have a modules website that indexes a lot of these modules. Developers can sort of submit PRs to our Nuxt modules repo and just add their modules. So we've got hundreds and hundreds of modules for lots of different integrations that are maintained, many of them in a sort of Nuxt community repository, or organization. But then there are lots and lots of ones which are just fully third party or even entirely private. So within a company or organization, they'll have their own modules and configuration that they share and install from NPM. So I think that's one of the interesting differences. Obviously, at the moment, there's server components that Nuxt is really championing, and sort of this move to the app directory. That's all fun and interesting to observe. I actually just published an article about Nuxt server components. So we're obviously, we actually had them before React. Don't tell anybody. We had server components before React. And it ours are very different. They're implemented in a different way. But again, we are circling. We're in similar waters. And so I think we have a lot to learn from each other.
Something that I've always loved about the Vue ecosystem and sort of Evan's outlook is that he always takes the best of everything that's happening in the ecosystem, or the community really that's working in the Vue ecosystem in general. So, you know, when Vue 2 came out, it was like there was a similar sort of like virtual DOM implementation, and you could write components in JSX if you wanted to. And there were all these really interesting things. And then as Svelte came out, people were like, oh, disappearing framework. Evan's like, yeah, we can do that too. And, you know, that kind of come in. And, you know, Nuxt coming along and again, taking a lot of these lessons and doing their own things. But, you know, I remember the server-side rendering story for Vue was sorted out long before React server-side rendering story was. And it's kind of interesting to hear about the server components thing being done early.
I mean, even now, the friction for React is so much harder than for Vue. So basically, it's really straightforward to write it, to write asynchronous code or to write data fetching into a Nuxt app. And also even for us to code it, how it works in Vue, you just have an asynchronous setup function for the component. We can have asynchronous sort of route navigation. It is not complicated in a lot of ways. I mean, it's very complicated with React. There's a lot of interesting work being done to make it less complicated and make it work better, but it is a lot harder. Whereas I think that's not so much a problem in Nuxt because of the fact that it's being built on Vue, and Vue has a different approach to what a component is and how a component renders. That means that we can have async setup and we can have async route navigation just out of the box.
In the same vein, are there some other things that jump out to you that are different in Nuxt that maybe like Nuxt can't even do just because of framework differences?
So some of the things we built this new server framework. It's like a server meta framework called Nitro, which is then it builds on lots of other tools that we also built, like H3, which is the Express replacement, and there's a really convenient fetch wrapper. Still uses the fetch syntax, but does things like automatically parse JSON and stringify a body and stuff like that, and lots and lots and lots of other things. Here's something. We support basically zero config deployment to almost any provider you can think of. So zero config deployment to Cloudflare, Pages, to Vercel, to Netlify, to Azure Static Web Apps. We offer some are not zero config, like AWS is not zero config, but it's just a choice in your Nuxt config. Basically, almost any provider that you can think of, we support. And if we don't support it, you can configure it yourself. And that is a lot of fun. The fact that it you just sort of push your site up, and when it builds in CI, Nuxt detects its environment and configures itself to build to that. So I don't think Nuxt has that. I might be wrong. But that, I think, is a very, very nice thing.
Yeah, Nuxt is like the opposite, where I'm scared to move to any other provider because it's so geared towards their own backend and infra.
I think that's a lot of fun. We've done a lot of work to try and make code that works in both worker type environments and node type environments. So we've got sort of support for Dino and Bun and Cloudflare and Lagon, all in this sort of V8 isolate. And so we emulate quite a lot of node, certain kinds of node stuff, so that you can be using code which does rely on node, like it's looking for a node request object. And so we sort of provide it with a sort of fake node request object, so the code still works. And that's fun. So I think, but I mean, a lot of these things, it's just how it is at the moment. It's not like these differences couldn't be less over time. I think, what else would you be able to do in Nuxt? So we do a lot of work in the compiler time. So we try and optimize things automatically. So for example, I don't know, does Nuxt do this? You have to tell me. We'll extract CSS that you use in your components, and we'll inline it in HTML. So you get sort of, I think Nuxt does this. I think they just started doing this, didn't they? So you get sort of the critical CSS required to render the page inline. And then we render subsequent CSS via just CSS files. What else do we do? We do stuff like, early hints. We support writing early hint view transitions. We have view transition support, and have actually since April. And what else? What other kinds of things? There are a lot. We have a lot of. We have a no scripts mode where you can run Nuxt as a multi-page app with no JavaScript at all. We have support for our server components. We have a PR that's about to land that will let you use server components from any source. So you can have a single server, which is a sort of microservice, rendering components for lots of different websites, which could be quite a fun use case. I don't know. There's lots of cool stuff happening in the ecosystem. I get to see a lot of it, but really talented contributors doing interesting things with Nuxt.
Yeah, I think that the open contribution model that you guys, and by extension Vue, has is really just drives this growth and creativity, where like the innovation doesn't have to be siloed to a company or a team that's testing it out before it ships. Like you can actually iterate, you can ship cool features without having to worry about companies caring.
One thing that I do want to ask, being that you are leading up the core team, I know that documentation is such a big part of the Vue ecosystem as a whole. So I'm curious about how y'all talk about documentation internally when you're doing just day-to-day development. Is this like every change you're shipping, you're like, you have like a line items, like, yeah, have we wrote documentation for this? Or, you know, what is the culture like around documentation?
So Nuxt 3 particularly, I think, so we rewrote Nuxt entirely for Nuxt 3, which I may not have said that, but basically we took something like 2 years, two painful years, maybe even more than that, and we rewrote Nuxt from scratch. And during that time, Nuxt 2 was also not looked after to the same degree that people might have hoped for. It was a tricky time. We're okay now. We're sort of on a good footing at the moment. But the but we had to do a lot of rethinking for a couple of reasons. Not just because it was a big major version, and Vue 3 was hugely different from Vue 2, and we didn't have primitives in Vue 3 that we needed on day one. We had to actually wait until they were there. But also we sort of pivoted to a new bundler, Vite, halfway through. So a lot of things were changing as we went. And so we were not documenting. So we had a moment where we needed to document everything, and we're just working through lists to try and get stuff documented. Even now, there are some gaps in our documentation. So I would not say, if you look at me, oh, there's a great culture of documentation in Nuxt. I think we do have some great docs, and I think that has been, but that has been largely contributors. So we've had people from the community who've documented things. We have had so Nuxt Labs is a company that was founded by the same people who created Nuxt, and actually a lot of their team joined in helping us document some of the stuff in Nuxt, and that's really beneficial. But it's difficult to document well as writing the code. And if you don't do that, it's very difficult for other people to document it, because the best people to document are probably the people who understand what it's doing are probably the ones who wrote the code in the first place. So it's difficult to get right.
There are different skills too. So it's, you know, maybe the person who wrote the code understands it the most, but they might not be able to explain it the best. So
yeah, it's a paradox, isn't it? Like it's a catch 22, I guess. It's tricky. It's tricky.
So one of the things that's interesting about the Nuxt ecosystem is that you guys have, I'd say, probably the best developer tools around. So for our audience who might not know about them, can you explain what Nuxt DevTools are in like a small subset of the things they can do for you? Because there's a lot of things it can do.
So Nuxt DevTools are creation really of Anthony Fu. I mentioned him earlier as a great artist and developer, and he's been active in the Vue ecosystem for a while. He's also on the Nuxt core team. And they are, the Nuxt DevTools are within, they are, it's in, it's added by a module. So one more thing that you can do with a module. It's added by a module, and they are sort of, it's an iframe. It's sort of injected by an iframe in your code, in your app that you view in the browser. And because it is injected that way, so it's not a sort of browser extension that's sort of inspecting your code. It's actually part of your application. So you can do a lot of amazing things. So for example, you could pick up, there's a button that lets you select any HTML in your page, and it will highlight it. You can click it and it will take you to the line in your IDE in the source file that HTML comes from. That's amazing. You know, if you're working on a project you're not familiar with and you want to change that thing that you see there, it is literally a click, point and a click, and you're at the file that does that. You can see a sort of interactive map of all the components in your project and see which ones are used, which ones aren't used. You can even see a sort of representation of them visually. You can see all your routes in your app, your server APIs. You can actually log all of the events that happen in your Nuxt app, all of your auto-imported utilities. Whenever any one of those is called, you can actually see the timing of it, how long it took to run, like the arguments that were passed to it. Modules and integrations that users add can contribute their own dev tools. So it's all accessible in one place, and you can actually have something that's, so for example, there's we have a sort of social image, OG image generator. It contributes its own dev tools, so you can play around with your social images and see what they look like. So it's basically really extensible, and it's pretty cool to explore. I probably am not doing it justice even. It's a lot of fun. And our sort of core inspiration for that was because we're doing so much for you. So there's a lot of magic in a Nuxt project. We still need to allow people to inspect what is happening. What is the exact magic that's taking place? You know, okay, there are auto imports, but which ones? Or you're transforming this code, but how are you transforming it? And so Nuxt DevTools basically gives you the ability to pull back the curtain and look to see what's going on under the hood. So you can inspect, for example, all of the code transformations you do step by step throughout your code base. And you can see, you know, what auto-imported components are available and, you know, what their names would be and what module injected them. And you can even click through to the documentation for them. So it, as much as possible, it's about making stuff visible and also getting rid of the friction. So, you know, if you're actually in your app, clicking on the bit of your app and getting the documentation for it to tell you where that component came from and which module added it and what you need to know about it. So, and then, you know, there's does a lot more. So the best thing to do is just check it out if you're curious. But I think it's been really great. Anthony's done a fantastic, and a lot of contributors, I should say, have done a fantastic job to make it possible.
It's really unique in the fact that you can actually have modules like hook into the DevTools too. So just from the examples on the side, it's just like, yeah, you have Uno CSS or Vtest or something that's like integrated into the thing. That's pretty cool. It's huge.
Some of it is just sort of, so you can, yeah, as you said, you can run your unit tests in the DevTools in your app, which they are testing, and actually use the app that they are testing to run the tests. So it's actually literally, it is the exact environment that you want to test them in. And you can do that, like there's even an experimental VS Code embed. I don't know if you saw that, but you can actually load VS Code in the DevTools within your app and edit your app, which is hosting the VS Code that you're using to edit it. I mean, this total inception territory, you know, this should not be possible, but it is. It's pretty.
It's almost like it makes it a video game almost. It's like traditional coding. It's like, you don't really know where to look. It's like, oh, Webpack's transforming my code. There's tests in the project. If I'm like a newbie coder, I open up a project, I'm presented with a wall of files and don't know what to do. This kind of just like contextualizes everything and puts it in one tool. And honestly, it's something I've wanted for a while. So it's really cool to see that the Vue and Nuxt ecosystem is actually like taking that and making the dream real, instead of just like, I've seen similar ones for Webpack, but their scope is far, 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 far less.
Yeah. That, I mean, it's fun. It is fun to code that way, as you say. And I mean, a lot of it we were able to sort of try out. So Anthony and a few others, Anthony started a client for Mastodon, and three others of us, so there are four of us on the core team, and a huge community of contributors, over 150, built it. It's a client for Mastodon, and it was, which is an alternative social network to Twitter. And we were doing that around about October, November last year. And actually a lot of the work on DevTools was able to be dogfooded with Elk. And actually, so we were able to try this. So we had contributors coming in, jumping into a Nuxt project that they'd never used Nuxt. Many of them had never used Vue. And so trying to make it accessible, that the sort of the point and click to get to the component they needed to edit. It's very real. Like these are sort of use cases and problems that we faced when we were doing it, which I think was a really nice way to develop something. Actually, to be facing the same issues. I mean, I think developing a framework, it's easy to get sort of separated somehow, to be a little bit further removed from a user of that framework. And so Elk was a chance not to have that happen.
Yeah, Elk is a really cool project. So there's a lot of other tools in the space. We just wanted to highlight like one, I guess, collection. There's a lot of the tools labeled under like UnJS. So could you talk about what that group of tools is, and sort of what the goals of those tool sets are?
So as part of building Nuxt, we needed to build other tools and libraries. So Nitro is an example. Some of the tools, for example, that we use to detect the environment you're in, whether it's Vercel or Netlify or whatever, tools to build for worker environments or others, sort of fetching tools, console tools, CLI creation tools, lots and lots of things. We decided early on that we didn't want these to be Nuxt only. We didn't want them to be just, Nuxt 2 was, we just had our sort of Nuxt utils package. And then we had a sort of Nuxt contrib organization where we sort of put some packages up, but really it was Nuxt contribute. We decided we didn't want that to be the case. And we actually created an entirely separate organization on GitHub called UnJS for universal JavaScript utilities. And as much as possible, we've sought to take things we build for Nuxt and open source them. And so we have lots of people contributing. We have community building stuff there that is really not Nuxt focused. Obviously, Nuxt people are interested and contributing to, but we have plenty of people who are not Nuxt, who are from other frameworks and libraries. And our aim is that this isn't just for us. I guess a lot of people who are in open source, you know, we're about collaboration and building great stuff together, and nobody's trying to build an empire. So Andreas is really a chance to put our money where our mouth is and say, that's true. We want to build this together. We want to, you know, build something better together than we could build individually. Andreas is, it's a GitHub organization, and it's a project, and it's a lot of packages, many of which, you know, you might already be using, but might not know about. You know, I was looking at sort of one of the packages, which one it was, just the other day, sort of 3 million weekly downloads.
Is that a Consola?
I think it might be.
Yeah, that one is 5 million. Are all of these like taken out of Nuxt, or like, I feel like some people have like donated packages. It kind of feels like we're a community of people maintaining JavaScript. Let's donate a package so that if I happen to go away, the package can live on.
You're right. Not all of them have come out of Nuxt, and some were sort of developed alongside Nuxt, but not necessarily taken from it. For example, I built a library called Fontaine, which aims to get rid of font layout shift. So when you're swapping in a web font for the default browser font, there's a flash because it's different size and shape. And Fontaine basically takes an algorithm developed by the Katie Hempenius and the Google Chrome team, which was also then used in Next fonts, but it's Katie's algorithm originally, and we did the same in Fontaine. And I originally built it as a module for Nuxt, and then realized actually this is generic, so it can be used in any framework, even Next actually. But in DocuSaurus and VietPress and Astro and any, take your pick. It works universally, and I would say that it wasn't taken from Nuxt; it was just alongside. And stuff like Anthony Fu developed Unplugin, which is a way of creating build plugins that run in any build environment. So they can run in Webpack and Rollup and ESBuild, Vite, and RSPack, and who knows, if you can create a new bundler, we might be able to make Unplugin support it natively. That was really because of a need we had, which was we wanted to support both Webpack and Vite as bundlers for Nuxt. But actually, the code in the project is entirely separate and is used by lots and lots of people who have nothing to do with Nuxt. In fact, probably Unplugin is used much more in the Vite ecosystem than in the Nuxt ecosystem. Not exactly sure about the proportions, but I think it would at least be as much in the Vite ecosystem as in the Nuxt one. So yeah, it's not just like they were taken out of Nuxt. I think sometimes they were from problems we were encountering there, but you know, there are plenty of people doing things that are not Nuxt related, and that's great.
Yeah, it's really cool to see that particular package. Sounds very interesting. Shifting fonts annoy me so much. I hate going to a website and seeing it render twice.
Yeah, I think that kind of thing, I think it's not exactly the same, but there's a lot of scope for improving the experience of server rendering, because the benefit of server rendering is that you have this instant, like from the moment it hits your browser, you have something that's rendered that tells you that you can see text, you can see buttons. A lot of the bad user experiences are when that's not immediately interactive, when stuff then shifts in and, you know, a banner pops down and you click the button, but by the time your finger touches it or the mouse clicks, a different button is in that place. You know, there are a lot of negatives associated with that. And those are things that we can really solve at the framework level.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we've covered a lot of ground here. You know, we started talking earlier in our conversation a lot about like the development cycles and how friction can slow down, you know, this feedback loop that's necessary for this creative process to really thrive. And I feel like a lot of the things that a lot of the work that you and the team have done in Nuxt and the Vue ecosystem has really sought to smooth a lot of that over, you know, provide a smooth on-ramp, give good documentation, give a good out-of-the-box experience, great dev tools, a lot of this stuff. So when we're looking at, or when you're looking at kind of where we're at now, and then thinking sort of about the future of the web or building websites, What does that look like to you? Do you think there are ways that we'll continue to work on reducing the friction going forward? Do you think there's something else big on the horizon?
So, I mean, I absolutely do think this is something we care, like that not just Nuxt, but I think we care about it. So one, we care about it because we are people and we are facing friction. And so therefore individually, we will all care about this as developers, and we will, and developers, we scratch our own itches. So we have the ability to develop tools, and immediately we try and solve our own problems. So that is always going to be something I think that we focus on and implement and create solutions for. I think there are a lot of interesting possibilities in terms of how we do that. GPT models, large language models, are making it possible to maybe have slightly different and more out-of-the-box solutions to some of that friction. So I joke that Nuxt 4 is going to be fully AI generated. So you just describe your app and that's what you're going to get. But I think there are interesting possibilities there. There are projects like Glossier, which aims to sort of deeply tie your documentation for your project with translation, which is AI generated, but also tied into translators. Like, that kind of thing could be really, really nice. That could really improve your experience in terms of developing something. I think translating developer experience into good user experience is important. So we all can get caught up in our own, you know, paper cuts a little bit too much, and we sometimes forget the impact of what we're doing on or not doing on our end users. And I do think we can work hard to make this possible. So I'm a firm believer in deep compiler integration, because as a framework can make a good DX for users, and we can also optimize for the end user experience, because we have full control, from the beginning to the end. We're in control of the bundler, we can add compiler plugins, we can actually make this work. And I think that's something that we are only scratching the surface of at the moment. So Vue is, we have an experimental vapor mode coming soon, where we have different kinds of components that we can compile. Server components are not fully out of the experimental flag yet in Nuxt, but that's a huge possibility for both DX and good user experience. Frameworks like Qwik are trying to think about what does sort of partial hydration look like. I don't think it's the right call, but they're interacting. They're trying to use the compiler to make things more performant on the final. On the consumption point in the browser. I don't think it's going to be what Qwik's done, but I think I wouldn't be surprised if there are things like that end up getting picked across different frameworks. So I think build tools are going to be a huge part of that. And I think personally, stepping aside for a moment, the things that we're going to see less of are the boring things, the things that we don't like doing. Those are our pain points, right? That's what we're going to be optimizing for, which is great. I hope that's what AI ends up helping us with, the things that we don't like, and keeping the things that we do, keeping the magic and the joy of creation and the artistry.
Cool. With that, let's move on to tooltips. So first up, we have Raycast, which we've had on the podcast, and both me and Justin like a lot.
I am a total fan of Raycast. So if you haven't used it, it is a command space replacement for macOS. You basically get a command palette for your computer. It comes with a lot of things that you might like flight tracking and calculator and an automatic the thing that got me was the automatic schedule. So it shows you what your agenda is for the day, and you actually can just press enter, and it launches the video conference of the next appointment you're in, which is just amazing DX. But you can also write your own extensions for it, and there's a whole store with people writing extensions for different things. I wrote one for my accountancy software, so I can see my bank for my business. I can see bank details and incoming transactions, and if I've reconciled them or not. And it's cool. You can build anything on top of it. Raycast is really nice. They have a new AI integration too, so you can sort of hook into ChatGPT. But really, there's so much there. It can do window management and clipboard management and sort of quick linking, bookmarking. It's a sort of all-in-one tool. It's probably one of the first I install after I install a new, if I have to install a new computer.
Cool. So next up, I found this on Twitter, I think yesterday. One of my tooltips from a past episode was shadcn/UI, which is this like CLI for like adding components to your app in a templatized way. This is a way to generate a form with those components from a Xod schema. So it's like very much in line with the like easy to use, fast iteration. You just define your form and then you can generate a component, a form with your components from your design system in your project. So I love seeing little tools like this that help you kind of like get an idea off the ground faster and help you iterate really quickly.
So this is a little toy that I found today. So the website is expensive.toys. It's by a developer, Arthur Bien. Hopefully I didn't butcher his name. Sorry if I did. But his whole blog is very delightful. He's got a lot of little like widgets that you can play around with. So Andrew, you can like spin the ring if you just like grab it and pull it. And if you spin it the other way, like they like disconnect. And yeah, you can, I don't know. It's really fun. He's got a lot of really interesting visualizations and just toys on there. And yeah, I don't know. His site's very delightful. I definitely recommend you check it out. It's so fun. We were talking a lot about the joy of programming. And when I see things like this, it makes me, I don't know, it just gives me that, like, the warm fuzzies that, you know, people are still being really creative on the web and building fun things.
This is amazing. So this is, you know, I feel this should be an Anthony Fu tribute episode because this is another Anthony Fu project. It is programmable slides. So you write your slides in Markdown. You can inject components. So view components. I don't know if React is supported, but you can just stick interactive code in your slide deck. It supports transitions. It can export to a PDF. You can create a static website with it. You can pretty much do anything you like. I've got my own integrations that like automatically pull photos from Unsplash. I have one of my friends has a sort of interactive voting thing where people scan QR codes in the audience and you get sort of live voting. Like it's hugely extensible. If you're a developer, you'll be right at home. And you can basically use it to create amazing slide decks that are just Markdown. And it's incredible. If you've not tried it, definitely check it out. It's really cool.
Yeah, I really love this tool a lot. And a lot of the other things that Anthony's written, he's so prolific. It's kind of crazy. We also have episode 25, if you want to read or watch more stuff that he's done. So we had Anthony on a while back.
He actually shared that too. And it looks like it's come quite a long way since then. That the QR code voting, that sounds just like next level.
Yeah, just to brag on him a minute, like the level of polish that everything he does has just blows me away every time. I'm just like, how many people are doing this? And it's like mostly 90% him. And I'm just like, how?
I think there's he's got a whole raft of skills, but I think one of them is his ability to pull in teams. So he's created created VTest, he created SlideDev. He's on the core team of Vue, Vite, of Nuxt. So some of these projects, you know, he'll create, bring a team on board. And then he trusts them to make good decisions. You know, he's not micromanaging a project to death, which I think is something we all need to learn from. Well, I mean, maybe no reflection on the current company, but I mean, I think that art of getting a team together and then trusting them, I think that's a very special skill.
Yeah, writing the code, really not the hardest part. Like once you learn how to write it, it's like, it's not much hard to write more, but building community and building products, those are two very, very tough skills to come by. And it's definitely shown that he has a few of those.
An important one.
Yeah. Okay, we got another one from Daniel here. Alacrity. I don't know if I said that right.
So I pronounce it alacrity, but I don't want to get in the way of any other pronunciations. It's a Rust-based terminal for your computer. It runs on Mac, Windows, Linux. It's cross-platform, very customizable. I have mine super minimal, and it is incredibly fast. It is the fastest terminal I've used. And when I use a terminal, I want it to be fast. I don't care about any features. So I've got, I use Starship as my prompt, and I have tmux for sort of like within terminal window management. And so, I mean, there's other stuff there, but the terminal, the window that pops up that hosts it, I think that is, should be as fast and minimal as possible. And so, you know, I know there's other stuff out there, but Alacrity, I really love for that, for the speed, instantly responsive. And it just runs whatever I throw at it, which is Starship and tmux and so on.
Okay, my last tool tip for the day is a tiny little React component that helps you add time inputs to your app. Time inputs, no fun to code. Timestamps, no fun to think about. So a component that takes both of those and takes it off of my mind, I like. It's not the most customizable thing, but for like a dev-focused dev tooling thing, something like this could really do the job. You don't need a full calendar picker most of the time. This like multi-input thing that they got going on seems real usable for lots of different situations. So if you're looking for a simple time input to add to your app, I'd give this a look.
I moonlight as a mechanical engineer. I am not by any means, but I wish that I was sometimes. And I love 3D printing. I love CNC, all these like very physical things. And one of the hardest things getting into that space can be modeling. There are some great modeling tools out there. Like Fusion 360 is a very, very popular modeling tool in the 3D printing or light manufacturing space. But they're often hard to get started with. Back in the day, like SketchUp was a good option. It's harder to get into. The quality's not as good as it was in the past. And I discovered Shaper 3D, last year or sometime. And the really cool thing about this is it's a CAD program that works on an iPad. So I can just like go to a cafe and, you know, design a 3D print or something just like on my iPad. And it's so, they've worked so hard on the UX of just making it very, very natural, like very easy to draw and stuff. And later this year, they're actually going to make it parametric. So it's not parametric right now. They're making it parametric later in the year. And I'm super, super excited because honestly, parametric CAD is like very necessary if you're doing anything sufficiently complicated. And pretty much everything out there on the market that's parametric is really hard to use. So I'm stoked. Can't wait. But anyway, if you want to do some like light 3D printing stuff and you're like, how do I get started in modeling stuff? Shaper 3D is awesome.
What have you been modeling lately?
I am working on, this is really hard to describe. A friend of mine are working on a like sort of this infinite scrolling paper. So it's like a big roll of paper that has like two brackets that you put on your desk and like two little servo motors. And it just like scrolls out. So think like a web page, but like physical. So it's just this like exploration of like, what if you had just like this infinite notebook or infinite canvas on your desk that's physical? Like, what would that be like? How would that feel? So I've been iterating on like some brackets and mounting for their servos and just trying to figure that out recently.
That's quite the side project you got there. Okay, last one for the day, Plash by Sindra Sorhaus.
He just comes up with amazing things, doesn't he? Another incredible dev. Plash is basically allows you to embed websites in your desktop wallpaper if you are on Mac. So you can stick existing websites, you can modify their CSS and whatever. I have a big desktop, and I hide the macOS menu bar, so I just really minimal. I thought I would really like to have a clock and actually a little dashboard just with some other key bits of information. So I threw it together in a Nux project in a few minutes, found the Plash project, and then just embedded the website that I had built. So it's interactive. The clock sort of changes time. I've got sort of key stats for some projects I'm maintaining that's sort of open issues, things like that. And it just beautifully blends in with my desktop. It's really nice. Again, if you like making things, you can easily build your own dashboards, your own anything really, or you can display an existing website that's already built. And you can have more than one site, so it's not just one. You can put multiple ones in. And it even has a feature where you can temporarily interact with the website to sort of log in or whatever, and then make it non-interactive, so it's just your desktop background. It's very, very cool.
That is quite cool. Okay, that wraps it up for tooltips. Thanks for coming on, Daniel. This was a interesting conversation into a world of JavaScript that I have very, very little interaction with. So thanks for coming on and explaining all these concepts to us.
It's been so much fun.
Yeah, thanks again. I'm re-inspired to go check out the work that y'all have done on Nuxt. And, you know, it's been a long time since I've been in the Vue ecosystem. Maybe it's time to check it back out. So really excited. And definitely folks that are listening, you know, check out the work you're doing.